Thank you for coming. Let me start with my second lecture. And today, as I promised in the abstract, somehow I'm going to try to connect electrochemical interfaces with electrocatalysis. Although at the end of my presentation, somehow I gave you some flavor about electrocatalysis of the hydrogen and oxygen electrochemistry. Today, I use somehow the same approach, which is surface science approach, in order to be able to focus on the hydrogen reaction. Again, I'm going to go around my cycle, and I'm going to somehow first to address some structure and nature properties of electrochemical interfaces. And then I'm going to try to connect these two interfacial parameters with activity and stability. Next week, I'm going also to talk a lot about selectivity. So as in the previous presentation, where I at least tried to focus on interfacial properties, today, again, for electrocatalysis of the hydrogen reaction, I'm going to demonstrate that it is indeed possible to study processes at atomic and molecular levels. As I said last time, this is very important to establish structure-function relationships, and finally, all of this knowledge somehow to incorporate in the real systems. Now, this is the summary, actually, what at least I tried to present in my first lecture. I think what is somehow, at least to remember, is important that structure of surface atoms somehow determines electronic and morphological effects. And this is very important to understand interfacial properties. But now this structure of surface atoms certainly is affecting adsorption of covalent and the water, for example, also on the surface. But not only this, for example, this adsorption, especially covalent interactions, are somehow through the feedback affecting also the structure of surface atoms. And you should keep in mind that the surfaces, for example, are alive during the electrochemical processes. They are constantly changing. So that's the reason why it's very, very important to have in situ, not ex situ, techniques, because this is the only way then really to assign certain sites to active sites. Adsorption on surfaces then again somehow are affecting the double layer structure through these non-covalent interactions. And as I said, adsorption is mostly somehow part of these covalent interactions. And non-covalent interaction, this is something what is new. I think in at least in surface electrochemistry, only few people are discussing, for example, the effect of non-covalent interactions. I'm glad that more and more, even somehow DFT, computational actually, people are now considering how non-covalent interaction may in fact control the kinetics. And without understanding this, without understanding processes in the double layer, without any kinetics, without any reaction, I would say it's almost impossible to discuss about understanding, for example, surface processes at atomic and molecular levels. I concluded somehow that during the that all of this, for example, adsorbates in via non-covalent or covalent forces are somehow creating promoters. And I'm going to talk about this today. At some point, the promoters, by definition, somehow is promoting the rate determining step. And there is a difference between promoter and catalyst, and this is something what I am going to discuss in the last lecture. Unfortunately, many of these covalently adsorbate and non-covalent adsorbate interactions are basically behaving as spectators, blocking the active site. So understanding, for example, how promoters and spectators are affecting the surface coverage is very important. And the only way, and certainly what is really this controlling, is again free energy. And you can see basically even for the same adsorbate, at different potentials or a different coverage with the same adsorbate, you can have completely different energetics of the surfaces. Why? Simply if you look at, for example, that energy of adsorption of oxygen, CO, and hydrogen, which, for example, I'm going to discuss today, strongly depend on the surface coverage of these intermediates. So it's really not just to go to gas phase and to say, for example, the or heat of absorption of oxygen is 300 kilojoules per mole. No. In electrochemistry, because through potential, you're increasing the coverage, you may 300 or you may have 300, or even sometimes you may go down to the 100. And this is something what is very important to remember. Now, all of this, for example, now kinetics and how, for example, coverage and potential are determining kinetics via covalent and non-covalent interactions. Today, I'm going to somehow to show for the hydrogen reaction. This is something what I showed also last time. And I purposely actually am showing this because, as I said, I'm going to talk about the hydrogen reaction. Keep in mind that by definition, reversible potential of the hydrogen reaction is zero. If you go negative, you have hydrogen evolution reaction. If you go positive, you have hydrogen oxidation reaction. And most of my presentation today is going to be how to catalyze this reaction and how, for example, based on understanding, we can create a much better catalyst with hopefully one day, for example, we can utilize in electrolyzers or in the fuel cells. So what are the key goals, at least for my presentation today? Is first of all to resolve processes at atomic and molecular levels. I would like to demonstrate that this is indeed possible. But also, based on this fundamental knowledge, actually, I would also somehow try to convince you that this is the only way, for example, really to, or the only way to move forward is to have this experimental strategy, which basically would allow to make much more active sites, to make, for example, stable sites, which is much more difficult, to have pH universal catalysts, and to have cost-effective catalysts. And for all of this, as I said, I'm going simply to focus on these polarization curves, trying somehow these polarization curves to make as closer as to reversible potential, because this is how I am going to maximize the energy which I can take out of the system or to put in the system, for example, in order to produce hydrogen. Now, the hydrogen reaction is somehow the mother of all electrochemical reactions, especially in electrocatalysis. I learned electrochemistry and electrocatalysis by studying the reaction mechanism. At least I have been taught that I can somehow understand the reaction mechanism of the hydrogen reaction. Today, I'm not going to talk about the reaction mechanism because last time also I said I really don't know what is the reaction mechanism. I have some hint what is the reaction pathway. And what at least I think most likely is happening, that the hydrogen evolution reaction is taking place to these two historically very important parts actually of the development. One is the first step is really this electrochemical step, what we call the Volmer step. It is simply interaction of hydronium ion with electrons to make adsorb hydrogen. The second step in order to make hydrogen could be through this Volmer step. I think this is something what I think I never considered this very seriously because it's very difficult to imagine how, for example, this proton is going to find this hydrogen to recombine and to make molecular oxygen. I think it's much more reasonable to follow chemical Tafel's step. Namely, first to have Herovsky, in which you are going to form your active intermediate, and there's these two active intermediates on the surface has to find itself to produce hydrogen. I was staying all the time on the left-hand side because this is in acid solution. That's the reason why it's red. However, for example, going to the blue part, which is pH 13, you can see that hydrogen production from water is somehow thermodynamically absolutely identical. So one can say, for example, that there is no basically the same material for the hydrogen production should be absolutely the same because thermodynamically doesn't mean am I producing hydrogen from proton or from water. But this is the beauty, actually, of hydrogen reaction, because not that in alkaline solution we are studying the hydrogen reaction per se, but rather we are studying also water dissociation step. Everyone is talking about water dissociation step for oxygen evolution reaction. Rarely people are discussing actually how important is the water dissociation step for the hydrogen evolution reaction. That's the reason why I try basically whole my presentation today somehow to dedicate to the almost to this alkaline environment, because I can't make better catalyst than platinum, for example, for acid solution. In fact, in acid solution, hydrogen reaction is so fast that it's impossible to measure kinetics. Only what we are measuring is in fact the diffusion over potential. So be very careful with all of these papers in which people are discussing the reaction mechanism for the hydrogen reaction in acid solution. I don't believe that this is possible, because there is no method that I can study the kinetics of hydrogen reaction in acid environment. So how to study all of this reaction, how to create, for example, the reaction mechanism. I mentioned also in my last talk, this is via this somehow very, somehow, peculiar, the volcano plot. It's very simple, actually. It's something what people are talking today a lot, but Parsons and Gerischer somehow established this in 1950s. So it's not really any new concept. The key is that, for example, for the volcano plot is that the rate of electrochemical reaction, for example, if plotted as a function of some physicochemical properties, which today we are calling them descriptors, one can establish, for example, really what is sitting on the top of volcano. And usually, whatever is on the top of volcano is the best catalyst for the hydrogen reaction. In fact, this is not only for the hydrogen. People are trying today to develop volcano for many, many materials. Now, certainly, using basically almost identical concept as Parsons and Gerischer, there are some new DFT approach, which basically is saying something very similar, that, for example, on the top is, for example, the materials which are following somehow, again, Sabatier principle, that reaction intermediates are neither too strongly nor too weakly adsorbed. And this is what is producing the optimum catalytic activity. Now you can see on this ascending part, you have materials which are absorbing hydrogen too strongly. Therefore, it's very difficult to recombine two hydrogen because they are too strongly absorbed on moly or nickel, for example. On the descending part of the volcano are the elements which are absorbing hydrogen too weakly. So you cannot produce enough reaction intermediates in order to be able to recombine in hydrogen. This is the whole concept. But the key question is also this volcano and this volcano are based on thermodynamics, and both of them are for pH 1. Why, for example, we found that it is not the same volcano in alkaline solution? And this is basically what I am going first to discuss. What are the differences between the red and the blue hydrogen evolution reaction? Now, considering that hydrogen reaction is studied basically for decades, if not centuries, I think still I would like, for example, before even I show any of my results, somehow to lay down the challenges. The first challenge, and on the end of this subsection, about one subsection, basically I am going somehow at least to give my opinion of how reliable experimental volcanoes are, what basically we are learning from volcano curves. Certainly it's very important to learn about the trends, but should really we be obsessed with the volcano curves? The second thing certainly is, as I mentioned in my first presentation, is why the hydrogen reaction in alkaline solution is kinetically much more hindered, for example, than in acid solution. Just to remind you once more, This blue curve is less active because reversible potential is here, and you need a huge overpotential in order, for example, to split the hydrogen or to make hydrogen. And what, for example, at least I was trying to do, how this blue curve to bring as closer as possible to the red curve. And this is very important. It's very important for alkaline system, for example, alkaline fuel cells and alkaline electrolyzers, which again somehow is becoming very, very promising new direction. Certainly the question is how to overcome this pH limitation. Not only how to overcome this pH limitation, but can we replace platinum with non-noble materials? Now, this is very important, because I'm afraid certainly you cannot publish in Science or in Nature anymore any nice work, fundamental work, if, for example, really you do experiments with platinum. So people are getting very desperate somehow, and certainly are working with these non-noble materials, trying to convince actually the community that no non-noble materials are going to replace platinum. Even without showing the results, I can tell you something. Definitely, I am going to retire with platinum. I don't know about you if you start actually working on platinum, but I think it's going to be almost impossible to replace the platinum. Now, the key problem for non-noble materials is not how active they are, but how stable they are. Because they are not noble, and electrochemical environment is very harsh. Electrochemical environment is going basically to destroy or to corrode any non-noble material. Now, certainly, through this corrosion or through all of this, the question is, what are the active sites? And can we find really corresponding descriptors for hydrogen evolution in alkaline solution? This is more or less the core of my presentation today. And again, how I am doing all of this, I start basically again with structure sensitive activity. And this is again for the hydrogen reaction in alkaline solution. Keep in mind that hydrogen reaction in acid solution is not structure sensitive. Or in order to see structure sensitivity, you have to go almost to zero temperature. And you see tiny difference, only a couple of millivolts, but not this huge difference, like in the case, for example, in alkaline solution. And I know some of my colleagues, actually, they spent really 3 decades trying to understand the pH effect. And only based on these single crystals, hopefully I'm going to demonstrate, I was able at least to give some new direction, not complete answer, but at least some new directions why, for example, the reaction is structure sensitive and why, for example, the reaction is very slow in alkaline solution. Now, before I continue with this, for example, and before I somehow start discussing this structure sensitivity, I would just like to mention that all of this, what I presented thus far, this is very, very ideal surfaces. And the real surfaces are far from that. Real surfaces are full of defects. And basically what we see, the trends in activity more or less are following the trends in surface defects. So I think the first thing, at least what I thought, is, for example, what the role of defects actually might be in driving this structure sensitivity, or maybe how I can create defects in order to improve activity in alkaline solution. Now, why defects? I think this is also very, very well known from the gas phase catalysis. For example, if you would try to split water on platinum in UHV, on platinum 111, you will see basically no chance. You can play with temperature, you can play with whatever you want. It's very kinetically hindered reaction. However, if you would put a couple of defects in vacuum, immediately you would see that this step is enhanced. So I was somehow stealing the idea from UHV and somehow basically having the same approach. What would happen if I would start with my platinum 111, which is the most ideal single crystals, and, for example, trying to increase the density of defects, of, if you like, of sophilicity of my surface, which basically would help dissociation of water on the surface. So again, this is something what I showed last time, but again, just for those who forget on all of this, let's say on platinum one, this is the STM images, and this is corresponding voltammetry. You see actually that you have clearly visible hydrogen adsorption region. You have something what we call the double layer region, and then you have this beautiful reversible OH adsorption region. Now, if I would go further, for example, let's say to make true oxide, then I would slowly start destroying basically this crystal, and I would see a lot of new peaks, which indicate that hydrogen adsorption right now start actually also populating the sites which are defected sites. Now, if you look at, for example, on this platinum decorate 111, this is the same surface decorated with diamonds, you exactly see a lot of these peaks. You see distorted OH adsorption. So clearly, for example, I have completely different toxophilicity or completely different, for example, a state of platinum surface atoms. Now, is it true that adiolants can enhance, for example, the splitting of water? Because I think recombination process of platinum, more or less, is not that affected by, for example, the structure of surface atoms. So in order to see this, for example, I was very happy when I saw the first results, that you can significantly increase the hydrogen evolution reaction. Let's say he's very lazy on platinum 111. Keep in mind that this is a reversible potential. So you have over voltage of almost 300 millivolts. Now, with on this surface, you also have only platinum. Now, basically, you can significantly reduce the over voltage. And that was first indication, for example, that the local work function, which again, electrochemists use very rarely, somehow, which basically are defects, are somehow affecting the kinetic of the reaction. Now, I was really thinking how to improve further, for example, oxophilicity of the surface, which obviously is obviously very important, for example, from dissociating on water molecules. And in order to do this, for example, again, I went back to UAG and I found that, for example, if platinum would be decorated with nickel or cobalt, then you would also increase, for example, dissociation of water. So we develop electrochemical method. This is not chemical method. We develop electrochemical methods, for example, how to deposit, in this case, nickel hydroxyoxide on platinum. How we know that is nickel hydroxyoxide? We did actually almost, we did a lot of experiments at APS in Argonne with X-ray absorption spectroscopy. We did a lot of, for example, STM, so we know exactly how many and the size of these hydroxyoxide. But also what was even more beautiful than just characterizing all of this is when we find that, for example, now the very same platinum decorated with this nickel hydroxyoxide can be increased eightfold. So it significantly, for example, increased the process. How we explain all of this? Again, we introduced something which was, again, unusual for hydrogen reaction. This is bifunctionality. This is something what is characteristic, let's say, for CO oxidation reaction. Nobody before even thought about to make bifunctional catalysts in a such a way, basically, that you can control two descriptors instead of only one, which is characteristic for acid solution, which is delta G, or free energy of adsorption of molecular hydrogen. The second descriptor is actually the descriptor which is controlling the Volmer step, which is dissociation of water molecules. And with this, for example, you can clearly see that you can increase tremendously, actually, the hydrogen evolution reaction. Now, if you look at in all of this in stoichiometry, without the splitting of water molecules, and making hydrogen, you also have OH. And again, we ignored this OH for so long time. But then I was thinking, if, for example, you have platinum and you have nickel hydroxyoxide, how this OH is going to react with this very oxophilic, for example, hydroxyoxide? And can I really somehow learn about also the effect of OH on the kinetics of this reaction? Certainly, just studying by platinum nickel hydroxyoxide, I wouldn't be able to do all of this. So basically, to understand what is going on with delta G of OH, I had basically to go and somehow to make, not me, but my postdocs, and they were at that time, I had two very good postdocs. We made actually this series of platinum, which is decorated with nickel hydroxyoxide, cobalt, iron, and manganese hydroxyoxide. I'm not going to create volcano curve. Only what basically I'm trying to do with this to have a constant trends, because only based on trends, at least I can give you some hint if OH is really playing any role. Now, let me somehow, again, for this system, let me just remind you once more. First, we found that delta G is somehow for splitting of water is very important, and delta G for adsorbed hydrogen is very important. But now if you look at the trends in activity, for example, for all of this, is somehow that manganese for trends in water dissociation are clearly actually going from nickel to manganese. And one would expect if only water dissociation step is controlling or contributing to the reaction, then most likely manganese should be the most active catalyst for the hydrogen evolution reaction. I think what we found, in fact, it was the worst one, even worse than platinum. The same applies for iron. So clear is not just how to dissociate water, but what basically one can do with OH minus. And trends in transition metal OH interaction are going from manganese to nickel. So what you have right now, you have one very somehow, if you like, promoting water dissociation, but simultaneously poisoning with spectators. So in order to understand all of this, you have to go back to Sabatier principle, that the best catalysts are not only catalysts who are actually the most strongly adsorb or dissociate molecules, but nickel hydroxyoxide most likely provide an optimal water dissociation energy, but also the binding energy with OH. So that's the reason why, for the beauty, at least how I see, the hydrogen reaction in alkaline solution is not just because of alkaline fuel cells of alkaline electrolyzer, although I appreciate that maybe one day it would be helpful to go into this direction. But because I can learn about water dissociation, I can learn about adsorption of hydrogen, I can even learn about adsorption or interaction with OH. And through my talk, you will see OH, for example, is indeed one very, very important descriptor. So is it possible, for example, based on this, is it possible to improve further the hydrogen evolution reaction in alkaline solution? So in order to do this, we start thinking also about changing the double layer. Can we change the structure of double layer in such a way that now double layer can help me? And again, what and how to change, basically, we again dive into one of our UHV systems. And somehow what, for example, at least from UHV results one can find is that if you have lithium on platinum, the water dissociation step would be increased significantly. So what we try to do basically, because all of these experiments we did in potassium hydroxide, then instead of potassium hydroxide, in potassium hydroxide, we add 10 to the minus 3 mole of lithium hydroxide. And what we find basically additional twofold increase in catalytic activity. So now the total increase activity, for example, from pure platinum to platinum covered in nickel hydroxyoxide in lithium hydroxide is tenfold. This is absolutely the highest activity ever observed for any materials for hydrogen evolution in alkaline solution. How we explain all of this, I'm not going in details, but somehow, again, instead of just focusing on these covalent interactions, we also now induce non-covalent interactions. Now, certainly, having lithium instead of potassium, because lithium somehow with higher specific a charge density than potassium can basically be anchored with nickel hydroxy oxide much easier. So you can bring lithium much closer to your surface. And this lithium, certainly this is my imagination, I never seen this. This lithium can, for example, help orientation of water in such a way that it would be much easier to take away OH and to, for example, platinum, somehow to steal hydrogen and then to recombine to hydrogen. So the double layer effect, I would say this is something, for example, what is really, I would say, something which can significantly contribute not only to surface electrochemistry in aqueous, but also to surface electrochemistry in aprotic solutions, which, for example, currently we are working on. Now, all of this was for platinum, but the question is what, for example, if I would really start thinking about real materials, having, for example, nickel instead of platinum, would I be able to see the same, or this is just unique for platinum? I don't need this. This is something what I was discussing, just trying basically to summarize that. This is unique, bifunctional effect. All of this activity somehow is something what you can find in my paper, so I don't need to go through this. But what I would really like somehow, I would like really to compare activity of the hydrogen evolution reaction in alkaline and acid media with sort of with and without KOH, with and without nickel hydroxy oxide on the surface. And based on this, at least to give you my volcano relationship, or at least what I think about volcano relationships. Now, again, in order to be able to get some information, you have to go to trends. I think in electrochemistry, if you really like to do some very well designed and to try to focus on model systems, you can't really focus only on one system. You have to do trends. Only based on trends, you would be able at least to have some idea about the possible descriptors. That's the reason why, for example, what we did. This is a graph which are showing, for example, overpotential. And keep in mind, overpotential means the higher bars, that means a worse electrocatalytic activity, because what you have somehow a higher, if you like, overpotential. So it's not, for example, what we see for copper, silver, and gold. Or in 0.1 molar KOH, this is pure copper. You can see this is the activity, and based on this, the most active is gold. In 0.1 molar perchloric acid, not surprisingly, as I said, in acid solution reactions are much faster. You see these red or reddish bars, which shows again that the most active is gold. But now what is happening when you start modifying with this nickel hydroxy oxide? First of all, what you see that one can dramatically increase catalytic activity from pure gold, silver, or copper. And now these activities are very basically close, especially on the copper, as in acid solution. So it's really somehow possible to bring activity in alkaline very close, for example, to acid solutions. What is happening with more noble materials? And in this case, for example, we choose ruthenium, iridium, and platinum. The same, for example, systems. Now keep in mind that if you look at activity of iridium and platinum in acid solution are almost identical. But also keep in mind that activity of iridium in alkaline solution is very high, much higher than on platinum. And this was the first sign that really just adsorption of hydrogen, which most likely is controlling activity in acid medium, is not the only descriptor. And now, certainly, what we found for example, for platinum, that once you decorate platinum with nickel hydroxy oxide, you see also these two other materials, you see also increase in activity. So it's really not just that whatever I was discussing before is varied for platinum, but without understanding platinum, I would have hard time, based on these polycrystalline materials, to tell you what I really think, why this is happening. Now, especially if you would do the same with nickel, titanium, and vanadium, you see also sort of some kind of trends But the key is somehow that always when you decorate with nickel hydroxyoxide, you can always activate the reaction. And right now, for example, in some real electrolyzers, alkaline electrolyzers, are actually materials, nickel hydroxyoxide cover, nickel covered with nickel hydroxyoxide has been tested. Now, based on this, if you just look at it like this, certainly I can make nice volcano relationship. And if you look at all of these DFT, they are like this. Points are scattered. But somehow, how to make this, for example, relate, because I know something. Nickel is not really nickel. It's nickel oxide. It's very difficult to have to prepare nickel in UHV and to transfer in electrochemical system without oxidizing nickel. We are now even learning when you go with platinum from, for example, UHV to electrochemical system, you oxidize always a little bit platinum. So my at least conclusion, for example, that there are no only few materials are oxide free. This is gold, iridium, and platinum, although also iridium may not be. So all of these volcanoes, experimental, what we found, might really not be somehow true. It's really something coincidental that you are getting volcano-like behavior. So experimental is very difficult, for example, to attain volcano relationships. But only by studying trends, for example, one can at least understand this reaction. Now, whatever I was discussing was for metal surfaces. And as I said in my challenge, on my challenge list, I said, what, for example, if I would go, let's say, for this very stable platinum or iridium, if I would do some non-noble materials. And in the literature, one can find, for example, that chalcogenides are rather active. But also, in fact, I start going in this direction, even without thinking about sort of chalcogenides for activity of hydrogen reaction. But nevertheless, my first experiments, somehow what we did with our, somehow with our systems, wasn't really chalcogenides. But rather what I choose to study gold single crystal. And this is, for example, gold is very somehow inactive for the hydrogen evolution. Again, this is the reversible potential. You have almost 700 millivolts over potential. But then what, for example, for me was very intriguing, when we put, for example, now on the top of gold some sulfur, and you can do this also in UHV, you see increasing catalytic activity. And for me, and also for people who are doing catalysis, usually sulfur is very bad. Usually sulfur, for example, is really a spectator which is blocking every site. So I was really surprised, how is possible that now you put sulfur and you see increase in catalytic activity? Now, based on whatever we learned from covalent interactions, and I show basically what I think about this later on. In addition, for example, to we then replace potassium with barium, and we see also further increase in catalytic activity. So how to explain all of this? We made actually somehow our schematics. Again, it's just somehow what I think, not basically that I've seen all of this. This is my goal. And as I said, we decorated gold with sulfur. And then what basically is happening? Without gold, basically this interaction of gold with these hydrated cations is very weak. But once you have sulfur, which is, let's say, partially negatively charged, then it can react, for example, with cations in the AA, the same way as nickel hydroxyoxide, as you remember, react with lithium. So now this cation through non-covalent can affect water dissociation step. And then certainly you have easier recombination step. And this is really true. When you replace potassium with barium, you see increase in catalytic activity. So it's really true that somehow you can follow, somehow you can change catalytic activity of your electrode material simply by changing the double layer structure of, if you like, the nature of the double layer. Now, once I found this, then I really decided to go with chalcogenides and chalcogels and to try to see, for example, what may actually, based on this how we can design our materials for the hydrogen evolution reaction. Just let me tell you that DFT calculations found basically that the active site for recombination of hydrogen is sulfur. And based on this, absolutely not true. Because if I would put more sulfur, I would poison the reaction. So you do need also gold, which I think serves to recombine the hydrogen. Now, as I said, we start thinking about to go from this model system to real catalyst. And I thought, maybe, can I make, for example, these chalcogenides? Or can I make chalcogels? Now, I think I'm very lucky that in my division, for example, almost next to my office is Mercouri Kanazidis, who is really the expert in the sulfur chemistry. I would say in US, most likely the best one. So we were discussing about this, and Mercouri made not chalcogenides, but amorphous chalcogels, molydisulfide, polysulfide, and cobalt polysulfide. But then, once basically we found catalytic activity, I am going to tell you, I'm going to discuss on the next slide, we decide also to make this COMOS, which is also very somehow important catalyst for dehydrogenation, actually, in heterogeneous catalysis. We spent almost 2 years at APS trying really to resolve the structures of all of these three components. And these are only few techniques which basically we were being using in order, for example, to find the arrangement of sulfur around cobalt and molybdenum. Now, basically, what are the differences in catalytic activity between these two materials? Or based on these two, for example, materials, why we decided, for example, to go with COMOS? Let me first start on activity. Again, keep in mind that this is over potential, higher bar, that means smaller activity. If you look at, for example, now this moly polysulfide, cobalt polysulfide, and COMOS polysulfide, what we learned, for example, that cobalt polysulfide is always more active, for example, than molydisulfide. And now, keep in mind, for example, that again, the trends in dissociation of water most likely goes in this direction. Now, also look at, for example, activity of cobalt polysulfide was huge. It was it was higher, for example, than platinum. And I was very suspicious. I said something is not, for example, what I would expect to see. This is the reason why, for example, we start focusing on stability and to see how stable these materials are. And what we found, for example, is something very interesting, that the most active cobalt polysulfide, in fact, is the least stable. And stability is really going in opposite direction with activity. Now, being less stable, that means that you are constantly producing the active sites. You are constantly desorbing something, opening the structure on which, for example, the reaction may take place. So I think that was the first indication, for example, that one should be very, very careful testing these materials. Just testing activity is not enough. Comparing activity and stability is the key to decide, am I going in this direction or not? Because for this cobalt polysulfide, after 5 sweep, we lose all activity because whole cobalt polysulfide was gone. Now, again, this is some kind of, at least our interpretation. Again, this is just my imagination. I don't know if this. But what we suggested, for example, that you have to rupture this sulfur-sulfur bond to open metal active sites to split the water. Keep in mind, this is very similar, for example, as in the case of nickel and cobalt hydroxyoxide. So there is really a close link between these materials, and certainly the first step is adsorption splitting, for example, the water. Why moly is less active than cobalt? Maybe because, again, as in the case of nickel hydroxyoxide, moly adsorb OH much more strongly than cobalt. So if you like, the frequency of or the turnover rate on this site is much higher on cobalt, although cobalt is not as good for the water splitting reaction as the moly. So based on all of this, somehow we propose that this is that basically one can create this type of materials by combining morphological and electronic effects. But also keep in mind that this is ex situ. We were doing the experiments, and then somehow we were trying after the experiment to see how much materials we collect in the cell. But this is only one thing. The second thing, for example, is during this, for example, dissolution or corrosion, the key question, what is corroding first? Does corrode first sulfur or cobalt? Or if you have cobalt and moly and sulfur, what would first corrode from the surface? In order to somehow to learn about this, again, we utilize this new ICP in situ MS method. Now, what, for example, we can do on the disk electrode, we can nicely see hydrogen evolution, and we reproduce exactly our results. I didn't say why we use COMOS, because if you remember, for example, cobalt was the most active, and moly was more stable. So we thought if we would combine one active and one stable in COMOS, that somehow we would gain in for example, we would gain really in the ratio between activity and stability. And this is indeed what we found. Not only this, that COMOS was uniquely active in acid and alkaline solutions. I still don't understand why, and this is what we are working right now. But as I said, what is important, for example, now during the reaction, we know that these surfaces are more or less unstable. What is corroding first, or can we follow in situ corrosion of cobalt, moly, and sulfur? And based on this, and based on beautiful Pietro's results, which we still didn't publish, what we found basically is that sulfur dissolution is huge. So the corrosion is triggered by reduction of sulfur. Once you start corroding the sulfur, once you start basically breaking the sulfur-sulfur bond and corroding the sulfur, then you open the sites, and then basically you see cobalt dissolution. And moly was the most stable. And now it's clear why we choose, for example, to combine moly and cobalt, for example, in the unit cell. You need cobalt simply to make more defects. You need moly in order to keep, for example, the catalyst at least as long as possible to stay stable on the surface. So I think this is something what, personally, I'm very excited about this. I couldn't believe that, for example, we can follow three different elements at the same time, which basically correlates very nicely with the kinetics. So now we can do all of this for our oxide system, which I'm going to discuss next week, and so on and so on. So this is, I would say, something which at least I try somehow to give you a flavor of how based on the same descriptors or the same rules, you can create, for example, noble and non-noble catalysts. But also you should be basically very, very, very aware of stability. And this is something what we recently actually published the paper. I didn't have time to put together. When we are showing, when you have only two atomic layers of this hydroxyoxide, then there is a huge effect of the substrate. If you would have bulk, first of all, bulk is thermodynamically is very difficult. I think even maybe in Pourbet world even doesn't exist. But all of this, for example, if you have only two atomic layers, not a big, somehow, chunk of materials on the surface, you would be able to stabilize. Again, now we are following this with our rotating this ICP-MS methods. We are following really stability of this. And maybe next time when we see each other, I also talk about stability. Now this is, again, now for COMOS and for other, we have stability. And I think also what is very important is not just stability, but also based whatever I was trying basically to share with you is keep in mind that density of defects are very important. Everyone is talking about defects. Nobody's really following defects. If you can follow in situ dissolution of your materials, you may say something at least about the order, for example, or the ratio between the defects. Keep in mind that in hydrogen evolution reaction, alkaline dissociation of water is a very important step. And keep in mind also that interaction of OH with, for example, all of these cations is very important. So this is something what, for example, this is the summary, but also is telling you that it's not easy to create volcano curves, because now you don't have only one descriptor. You have three descriptors. And which one is you are going to choose actually depends on many experimental conditions. Now, this is for hydrogen evolution reaction. What about the hydrogen oxidation reaction? I think challenges are the same. How to catalyze this reaction and to bring close, for example, to the red curve. And this is, I have only two slides. Don't be scared that I'm going to go over my time. Just to demonstrate how one can design the materials, which basically is going to be as active in alkaline as in acid solution. In order to do this, again, we basically were relying on trends. And in this case, what we have to do, we need the sites which basically are going to provide the sites for adsorption and dissociation of water molecules in order to make water. Now, this is somehow water production, if you like. But again, look at this OH minus. We never actually take into account. And again, now my story going to focus on importance of OH rather than on importance of dissociation of hydrogen. Certainly, this is somehow playing very important role. In order to follow the role of OH, again, you have to change oxophilicity. Ruthenium likes, for example, is very oxophilic. It's very easy to make oxide. Platinum basically is a little bit more noble, but gold is very noble. So nobody was expecting even to see hydrogen evolution reaction of gold, because gold is so inactive that even cannot split, or at least people actually thought it would be impossible to split the hydrogen molecule. Now, what we can see, keep in mind that the current density for ruthenium are very small, 20 microamps per square centimeter, comparing, for example, with platinum, 3 milliamp. But the onset for ruthenium is, for example, much more positive than for platinum. Therefore, ruthenium itself would be much more active if ruthenium would not be simultaneously covered with a lot of OH, which are spectators. So basically what you do, you activate your reaction, but then you are killing your reaction because you have too much OH on the surface. Platinum, on the other hand, because it's noble, is lacking OH. So what I'm trying to say, I'm trying to catalyze my reaction not only by hydrogen dissociation, but also OH interaction with intermediates and production of water. So keep in mind again that, for example, you have kinetically limiting current, then you have diffusion. But then again, you see hydrogen evolution reaction is going down. Because now, as the case of ruthenium, you have too much oxide. So now this oxide is becoming somehow a spectator. On gold, surprisingly also, you see some reaction, but only the potential range where you have OH. I don't know. Certainly, you have to believe me that on gold there is some OH in this potential range. So it is clear that, for example, to catalyze this reaction, you need combination to split the hydrogen bond and to provide hydroxyl species. And what is in between all of this is iridium. Iridium is just with oxophilicity between ruthenium and platinum. And if you would do now hydrogen evolution reaction on iridium, you would find that it's extremely active. It's a couple of orders of magnitude 1-1 iridium more active than platinum 1-1. So OH might play some role. Now, from these single crystals, as I said, at least our surface science approach is how all of this, what we learn, how we can transfer, for example, in real systems. So this is, for example, platinum nanoparticles with very similar loading as iridium. And again, for nanoparticles, you see a huge increase in catalytic activity. So for hydrogen reaction, is not enough. Hydrogen oxidation reaction is not enough only one descriptor. Somehow the binding energy of hydrogen or the energy required to split the hydrogen. you also need to have OH, which basically is going to accelerate somehow this process. And in order somehow to convince ourselves that we were somehow right, instead of doing, for example, then again, we use something what we learned from the C oxidation reaction. C oxidation reactions are intrinsically bifunctional, in which you need a site for CO adsorption, but also you need a site, for example, for OH adsorption. Platinum is providing the site, as I'm going to show on my next slide, for CO, but then also you need a site for formation of OH. And this is the same. Now you can see on our platinum 0.1 ruthenium 0.9 alloy, you see that in alkaline solution, activity as high as for platinum in acid solution. So it is indeed possible, simply by tuning two parameters, two descriptors, the binding energy of hydrogen, but also the binding energy of OH, somehow you can really improve tremendously catalytic activity. Again, I think whatever I'm discussing thus far, I don't expect that you are going to remember anything, but just how important is really to follow trends, and how important is, for example, to see if, for example, my approach or proposed reaction pathway is operative for hydrogen, and if the same is operative for CO, then I might be at least on the right road. And as I said, for CO oxidation reaction, platinum serves to absorb hydrogen and ruthenium to absorb OH. Keep in mind that CO oxidation is taking place in this potential range. So first I did, for example, I move from hydrogen evolution, and then I stay in this potential range for hydrogen oxidation. I showed that OH is important here. I hope I showed that also OH is important for the reaction here. Now, let me convince you that, because this is very well established, that if for CO I can demonstrate the same, then I think at least I am building somehow the approach which may help me to understand not only hydrogen, but also many, many other processes. So for CO, as I said, we spent a lot of time, and we know a lot of about CO. We basically develop X-ray diffraction and FTIR. From FTIR, we know exactly what is the binding sites for CO. From X-ray diffraction, we can follow how you change the structure. This is what I was mentioning last time, from one, let's say, P2x2 to 3CO to root-19 structure. But again, what basically I would like to somehow to emphasize is not the structure, but this is just to remind you that, for example, electrochemistry is really very, very powerful. And you can see also here that CO oxidation reaction indeed takes place in this potential range where you have OH add on the surface. Now, what basically why I like to go now in the CO direction, with only two slides and then I'm done, is because, for example, CO is taking place at more positive potential. And we know exactly that this is bifunctional mechanism. Now, let me come back to what basically one of my first slides actually I introduced to. This is, again, trends. And what basically I was, again, interested is if OH is going to play the role, not only the coverage by OH, but also the nature of OH, then I might actually find the same trends for CO oxidation reaction, which basically can support my hypothesis, how important it is to understand, for example, OH electrochemistry at the interface. Again, for all of this system, we have toluene, somehow we defined actually our surfaces very comprehensively. But this is now, I think, very important. This is not CO oxidation. This is what we call CO stripping. You absorb CO at negative potential. No, this is not CO. This is just voltammetry, basically, for all of this, for example, for systems. Now, what is important in order to be able to follow catalysis is to have always the same number of platinum sites, or if you like, the same surface coverage with this hydroxyoxide. If it's not the same coverage, then I cannot claim, for example, that the effect what I see are somehow related to the right electrochemistry. Now, how to determine the coverage? We can determine through this hydrogen adsorption region. This is unmodified platinum. When you deposit, for example, this hydroxyoxide on platinum, you know that hydrogen doesn't interact with them. And also what you know that, for example, all of this hydroxyoxide serve as a, what at least in heterogeneous kata or in UHV, people are talking about third body effect. They're spectators. So now you can see for all of this, we almost have the same, for example, coverage with hydrogen on platinum. So now we can really claim that, for example, we have very similar surface coverage. Certainly these are representatives, so don't just follow this. This is to give you an idea what is on the surface. But now look at OH adsorption. I think this is very important. Certainly, manganese is the most oxophilic, so it's not surprising that OH adsorption on the surface covered in manganese start sort of at the beginning, is onset is actually very, very negative. And the charge is huge. But then you have iron, then you have cobalt, nickel, and then the last is platinum. So this is clearly the surface coverage actually by OH. Not only surface coverage, but also it's telling you about energetics, that OH on, for example, manganese is extremely strongly adsorbed because you see lots of charge. On nickel, on the other hand, you see some shift, but OH interaction with nickel hydroxyoxide is not that pronounced. How this, for example, energetics and coverage would affect CO? These are just somehow, again, showing that you have a constant coverage with hydrogen and that you have constant increase by OH through, if you would basically go with pseudocapacitance for these systems. Now, based on this, and if you would look at, for example, at least I promise to my colleague that I'm going to show one DFT. Results. When we got this data, the DFT or the computation basically try to see is it true what, for example, we find experimentally, and he basically made us very happy when they say indeed energy of adsorption with moly is much stronger, for example, than platinum interaction with OH. Now, what is happening with catalytic activity? I think catalytic activity, basically you have the trends. And what was really interesting, that you have the same trends for CO oxidation reaction as for hydrogen. And certainly these two reactions has nothing in common. Only what they are sharing is OH add, what I was discussing at the beginning. This is the only descriptor which basically may control CO oxidation and, for example, hydrogen evolution reaction. This is somehow based, at least on this, somehow we propose that, for example, really OH is a common descriptor for CO oxidation and for hydrogen evolution reaction. And as I said very recently, actually, in one of my reviews, I'm really not that interested anymore in particular reaction. I would rather try to go and to try to find common descriptors for various reactions, for hydrogen, for oxygen, for CO, for methanol oxidation, trying really to understand more, trying really to unify the field, rather somehow to go narrow, to zoom, for example, a particular reaction. So I think all my presentation today, more and more I'm thinking about this, was basically based on bonding energy or OH chemistry. And certainly we know OH plays extremely important, actually, role in oxygen reduction and definitely in oxygen evolution reaction, which I'm going to talk next week about. So what we propose as a reaction mechanism? We know for CO that certainly is bifunctional catalyst. You have platinum for adsorption of CO, but then you provide a site for OH. Platinum is very noble, so platinum contribute or platinum to provide OH, for example, has not enough power. But if you have nickel hydroxyoxide, for example, which adsorb OH neither too strongly nor too weakly, then definitely, for example, you can enhance this reaction. This is almost like modifying platinum with ruthenium. And keep in mind, again, I catalyze hydrogen oxidation reaction by adding ruthenium on platinum. So again, you can see for all of these reactions, you have kind of common descriptors, which again may basically, again, this is just my imagination, don't follow this. Sometimes you need something like this in order to be published in some of the journals. But nevertheless, all of the story is basically the story about Sabatier principle. That's the reason why at the beginning I said, I'm not going to talk about the reaction mechanism. At least I give you my story about, for example, reaction at the interfaces. And what, for example, how critical it is to understand and not to follow blindly, for example, whatever people are saying, what descriptors are. And be very careful with activity of non-noble materials. Many of these non-noble materials are basically active and stable only in the author's lab. We try, actually, some people are there sending us their materials, very active and very stable, and we find that this is absolutely not true. So be very careful if you go in this direction, how you are going to make a balance between activity and stability. So what, at least I try to share with you today, is that, again, surface science approach, at least for interfaces in aqueous system, at least for me, is the main guidance. I think without surface science approach, I wouldn't be able to find, for example, these the most active materials for the hydrogen evolution reaction in alkaline solution. Without surface science approach, definitely, I wouldn't actually find the COMOS as unique and pH universal and stable. I put question mark because now we know it's not stable. But now I think what is very important, we have to try to follow, for example, stability. Well, what is really beautiful with this, let me tell you this, I didn't talk, and I'm not going to talk next week about. Now you can, because also all of these chalcogens are used also for oxygen reduction reaction. But when you go now positive, what is very interesting, is basically what is triggering dissolution is not oxidation of sulfur, but rather oxidation of transition metal. So this is something what we are trying to understand, how basically at different potentials, basically how you can trigger corrosion of different materials. Now, based on this, I think it's very important to have in situ methods for following activity and stability. And it's crucial to find the balance. I discussed with some of you, and I said when I basically saying that many, many, especially perovskites or many other materials are not stable during oxygen evolution, during oxygen reduction, and all of these volcanoes are basically more or less volcano for stability rather than activity. I was accused that I am destroying electrochemistry. And I asked why. I said, but because you're saying that materials are not stable. And my answer was, I am not stable. I am deteriorating actually slowly. Why I should make my materials to be stable? Only what is the key, like in life, to find the balance. I have to find actually the most active, but somehow to balance with the most stable materials. And I think this is the key designing principle right now, what we are focusing on. Because I keep saying, we know how to make active, we don't know how to make stable materials. Now, based on my surface science approach also, somehow we were able to make the most active materials actually for hydrogen oxidation reaction. It's fivefold more active, for example, than platinum itself. Surface science approach certainly actually gave me opportunity to try to find unifying descriptor. Defects, everyone is talking, but it's very difficult to follow defects. I know it's also the battery community right now to talk about how, how defects are affecting mobility, for example, not only through interface, but also through the bulk. But I think there is still a lack of a model system which basically you can control the density of defects. Not just to take materials and hoping that the density of defects is always the same. Basically, I was trying to demonstrate that there are the same descriptors for the water cycle and carbon cycle. And the least, I think one of the most exciting, at least for me, unifying descriptor is what I call activated water. This is something what I'm going to discuss, especially in the last lecture. I think the future of electrochemistry might actually lie not only in the absorption of oxygen, in the absorption of hydrogen, but rather understanding, for example, interfacial water. We can't see water. There are no spectroscopy. We are just playing with water, to putting in equation as somehow really to balance the geometry of equation, but rather not thinking, for example, about very, very important, actually, water, for example, as proton donor is many, in many, many reactions. So with all of this, just let me introduce the subject of the next two lectures. I'm going to use and I'm going to demonstrate that although oxygen electrochemistry and electrochemistry in organic environments are completely, certainly different field, they share many, many of my descriptors, which, for example, I introduced to you today. Again, I would like to thank to my group. Many people are still not there, but I have many new people. And definitely, I would like to thank you for your attention. Thank you.